The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to this recording of the American College of Osteopathic Internists Internal Medicine Board Review Course. The course was held in Baltimore at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel on May 8th through 12th, 2019. The course featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of importance to the internist preparing for initial certification or for recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Acute and Chronic Neuropathies is presented by Dr. Scott Spradlin.
So when we look at acute and chronic neuropathies, particularly to the boards, we really got to think about definitions and terminology. So mononeuropathy, as you know, is where one nerve is involved at one point or impingement. Mononeuropathy multiplex is one nerve but multiple points of impingement. And then polyneuropathy, which you don't see as much in practice, some of the rare ones, they certainly find their ways to the board and they have multiple points of impingement. So let's start with a question. We have a 72-year-old man who presents to your outpatient clinic with recurrent spells of hand numbness. On exam, he has weakness of fingers spreading. He has sensory loss in the last two fingers, splitting the ring finger. The most likely etiology for this symptom is TIA, C6 radiculopathy, C7 radiculopathy, or ulnar neuropathy. And it's an ulnar neuropathy, classic ulnar nerve distribution in that presentation question. So what's the clinical workup when we go to evaluate a neuropathy? Well, it's going to be pertinent to the history and physical that you take. So then you're going to get more focused on, is this a chronic disease around diabetes, looking for glucose, looking for metabolic issues with thyroid or creatinine or a blood count. But then, trying to figure out, is there an inflammatory component? So the sedimentation rate is very, very important. Then, based on age, you may be wanting to look for certain cancer screenings or age-appropriate screenings, but certainly based on those symptoms and those findings, whether a image is needed of either the chest or the area involved or an EMG or a nerve conduction test. And all those can be evaluated in its entirety to determine where you're at. So let's first look at focal compressed radiculopathies. They're localized peripheral nerves. They're usually from compression. You must differentiate it from multiplex, because remember it's multiple sites versus single site. Examples of that's going to be radial neuropathy, carpal tunnel syndrome, very common with median radial nerve, the ulnar nerve we just described in the example, sciatica, which is one we had yesterday when we talked about it, and it's real good board question to determine sciatica between whether there's a ruptured disc or it's a sciatic impingement. Peroneal nerve, that's an eversion and inversion of the foot. Inability, and it usually comes from someone that's been sitting for a while. And then brachial neuritis, which can involve an entire limb. So let's look at mononeuropathy multiplex. It's a single nerve involving multiple sites, as we talked about. Tends to form unsymmetrical to symmetrical. Diabetic neuropathy is the most common multiplex mononeuropathy. Examples of that are going to be multiple sclerosis as well as alcoholic neuropathy and Bell's palsy. Polyneuropathies, Landry's Guillain-Barré is the most common autoimmune polyneuropathy. Diabetic peripheral neuropathy is the most common polyneuropathy. We all kind of know that. Hereditary motor and sensory neuropathy, we'll talk about in a minute, look at some examples. And then chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, CIDP, where steroids do make that better. And it's very difficult to differentiate Guillain from CIDP in certain instances, but it's usually with steroids you can differentiate. Other polyneuropathies are HIV. You saw some of that in the infectious disease lecture. You got to always think about heavy metals. You'll get that in the history. And there's going to be some signs we'll look through that can kind of guide you there in a couple lectures today, not only the dermatological ones, but a couple we've got here. Nutritional deficiencies, paraneoplastic syndromes, and rheumatological diseases such as lupus. So let's look at hereditary motor and sensory neuropathy. It's also known as Charcot-Marie-Tooth. It's the most common inherited polyneuropathy. There's two main types, type 1 and type 2. It can be autosomal recessive or autosomal dominant. It has a very slow, gradual onset over years. There's an associated foot drop and weakness, and there's sensory loss in a stocking and glove distribution. So for a board question for this one, it's going to have to be years of onset. I'm talking 10, 15 years. It's not going to be last week. You are going to have an associated foot drop, and it's just going to have that stocking glove type part in the question, as well as it's going to be bilateral. Landry's-Guillain-Barré, it's the most common inflammatory polyneuropathy. It's an ascending paralysis with weakness of the limbs. There's areflexia. There's usually always some associated viral illness or bacterial illness prior to that. I put some examples on here. The board loves to pick the thing of the week. MRSA is one that has jumped in there before, or staph, but usually it's gastroenteritis is most common, but it can also have CMV, Campylobacter, rabies, and others. Lumbar punctures go show an elevated protein with a slight increase in cell count, and the treatment for that's going to be IVIG, plasmapheresis, and steroids are of no use. So let's look at another question. And remember yesterday I said when you get a question in a picture, there's something in the picture. Even if you look at it and say, I didn't see it, you got to go back and look at the picture again. So we got a 52-year-old man presents with 2 years of gradual onset burning, stinging, and tingling in the feet and fingertips. Shoes, socks, and even the light touch of the bed sheets are very irritating. When walking, the man becomes severe, like an electrical shock in his feet. Examination shows the sensation of stocking glove pattern. Muscle strength is normal. There's generalized atrophy of the calf muscles. Muscle stretch reflexes are absent. Blood glucose is 169, and the creatinine is 1.6. So we have a picture, and it's true. We see some very chronic changes there. We see definitely an atrophic leg. Your calf muscles there are essentially non-existent. So what we have here is a chronic progressive sensory neuropathy. So when you think about that, just kind of mentally go through that in your head. Is it metabolic? Is it alcohol related? Is it nutritional? Is it vascular? Is it toxicity or rheumatologic? And for a board exam, unlike in your office, you can't, they've got to give you enough information to make a logical answer. So when we look back at that question, what was the driving point of that? There was a glucose of 169, right? Bilateral, probably diabetes. So there's going to be a ton of lab work that could be affiliated with the question, glucose in this point, but if it's a sed rate, thyroid, a radiograph, or other tests that are going to steer you toward rheumatological with the B12, B1, ANA, or vascular studies, that'll be what will drive you to that right solution. So let's talk about treatment of neuropathic pain. For the board exam, it's real important that you don't pick anything opioid. They're not going to ask you to put anything opioid. They're going to try to get you to put opioids on there, but that's not what they want. In real life, we know that sometimes you get to that area. But for trigeminal neuralgia, you should be looking at a carbazepine or an oxycarbazepine. You know, the gabapentins, the anti-seizure medicines like the lamotrigine or the baclofen, certainly feasible. For limb neuralgia and for the continuous burning and dysthesias associated with diabetes, gabapentin or pregabalin is going to be where you're at. I think that it's fair for them to go after the SSRIs, but really wanting to see that more complex pain management around those diseases of chronic nature. So let's look at another example. Got a 24-year-old man who presents with 5 days of progressive burning, stinging, and tingling in the feet, gradually ascending up the legs and hands. He has difficulty walking because of development of bilateral foreleg weakness with foot drop. A few days before the onset, he had a severe GI symptom, and he's got distal sensory loss in a stocking glove pattern. Muscle stretch reflexes are absent, and foot drop bilaterally. So we have everything we just talked about all in one question. The one thing I don't want you to do is see GI and no reflexes and say that's Guillain-Barré. It'd be real easy to do that if you're speeding along at 100 miles an hour on a board exam. They threw in the GI to try to see if you would go after the Guillain-Barré. But really, this is 5 days. There's some stuff that looks really like Guillain-Barré, but they gave you a picture. And in that picture, there's a hand. And there's a white arrow there to a white line across that fingernail. And anybody know what that white line is? That's a Mies line, yeah. It's a Mies line, and it's associated with what? Heavy metal toxicity. So in this situation, this was probably arsenic or thallium heavy metal poisoning that had come over time. So let's go to the next one. 29-year-old man presents after waking up with intense aching in the right jaw and ear, head sagging to the face. Examination shows here, you know, raised eyebrows with a deficit, otherwise normal exam. Sensation is mildly increased. What's the diagnosis? And what's the treatment? This is pretty classic of Bell's palsy. There's really no lab procedure test needed. Diagnosis can be made from a physical exam. The one thing you want to go after here is that you don't CAT scan every Bell's palsy for a stroke. You want to make sure you use the physical exam as the driver. If there was a vesicle found in that ear with the same presentation, and you saw it the other day, I think, from Dr. Blackburn's lecture, that would be Ramsey-Hunt and herpes zoster oticus. Okay, let's look at the next one. 25-year-old man presents with 3 days of gradual progressive difficulty walking. He has weakness of his arms and his legs feel heavy, and now his feet feel numb. He has no history other than the flu last week. Moderate weakness of the proximal and distal muscle groups. There's mild decrease in vibratory sense in the toes, and his muscle stretch reflexes are absent. What is this? And they give you an EMG that's delayed. This is classic Guillain-Barré. Next case, 40-year-old presents with 15 years of gradual progressive difficulty of the ambulation. Most recently had difficulty with hand function, with grip, strength, and opening jars. There's minimal tingling in the toes. The symptoms are symmetric, so anytime you hear the word symmetric, you gotta think about a chronic condition that's metabolic in many instances or hereditary. Prominent tibial bones, atrophy of the intrinsic muscles, pes cavus, they show a picture to the right, so that tells you that you've got some chronic muscle atrophy with changes. And decreased vibration of sense in toes, in the toes and fingertips, and there's an associated foot drop. So based on what we just learned about a disease, this is classic Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease. Number 7, 51-year-old man presents with 3 weeks of continuous burning and stinging and intense discomfort in the side of the leg as shown. He has no past medical history, he takes no medications, he has no back pain and no recent viral symptoms. This is another one of those patients that you've never seen before. Super sensitivity in a circle area described in the picture to the right. His reflexes are normal. This is lateral cutaneous neuropathy or neuralgia parasthenica. It's also known as Bernhardt-Ross syndrome. And of course, it's usually from tight-fitting clothes or belts. And conservative therapy usually resolves in 3 months. Okay. Next case, 53-year-old woman presents with 5 days of burning pain in the left anterior chest. And after yesterday's lecture, you know what you would have done. You would take her immediately to the cath lab. And figure out what Timmy flow is or what class 2 lesion they may have. It radiates around her side to the anterior chest in a band-like pattern. She I've found at least three cases of herpes in my life that were on a gurney to go to the cath lab. That's no joke. In the last 24 hours, she has developed clusters of vesicles and a red basin area of burning pain. And you can see the picture to the right. Don't miss this. It's shingles, right? Perfect. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. We kind of saw a picture of that yesterday. It's Lou Gehrig's disease. It's used to be something that's pretty rare. Just like the dementia talk we had, it's not so rare, but that all of them aren't Alzheimer's. AOS is something that people are seeing a lot more of. Used to be, you'd hear one person say, I saw a case of that when I was a resident. Now it's not uncommon to have an internist say they have 5 to 10 of these in their practice, and it's growing. It's a progressive degenerative and wasting, muscle wasting disease that has sensory and cognitive changes. It affects men or more than women, age 40 to 60. Its associations are perfect for a board question, as well as it is difficult for you to add all those symptoms up as a clinician to make that diagnosis. The critical piece of that is making that diagnosis early really makes a huge difference in the patient's life, because most of them don't get diagnosed until a few months before they pass away. But there's weakness, fasciculation, spasticity, paresis, and hyperreflexia. There's dyspnea and difficulty with their airway. There's difficulty chewing with dysphagia, and a loss of control and liability with emotion, as well as a slow intellect. Change comes last. And so these people are able to tell you how they feel, they're just not able to move. And slow, progressive, bounces around. And usually they're very, very subtle of just weakness. And one of the key things is those fasciculations like we talked about yesterday. The diagnosis is with an EMG. Death is usually resultant of pneumonia or respiratory failure. One of the things, the reason I think this is probably going to come back to the boards is not because of what I just mentioned about it being more prevalent, but that we've got a lot more new treatments. And so Ryotec had been out for a while. Radicava had come out a few years ago. It's IV. It has a really slows down the decline of this physical disability with, and so it even makes early intervention and diagnosis more necessary now. So supportive nutrition, ventilation, communication, and there's also a lot of ethics and discussion there about end of life that makes it a wonderful setup for a board question. So I've got about 12 minutes. So I'm going to try to finish up my slides from yesterday. I wanted you to look at some of these because as we go through some of the other stuff, remember when you look at your films, always look for asymmetric. And you can here see that there's definitely a lack of circulation here on this angiogram. So this patient's most likely to have which one of the following findings? Amnesia, ataxia, dysphagia, hemianopia, or hemiparesis. That is the middle cerebral artery, so it's going to be hemiparesis. I showed you that one. Next one. Don't mistake bony lesions for strokes. Here's an image. What's the diagnosis? Remember your Hounsfield units. Look at how white the bone is. Look how white this is. That is a bony mass. So it's not a hemorrhage. Even though blood looks white, blood doesn't look that way. If that would have been a bleed, it wouldn't have been attached to the scalp, to the cranial bones. Okay? So this is a meningioma. This one. I know infectious disease talked about nocardia, and I'm not about to tell you I'm an expert on nocardia, but when you get a lot of CTs of the head, there's a lot of things happening in CTs, and they all have white stuff and white spots in them, right? For purposes of the board, when you see something with this punctated white spots all over, they're going to try to drive you down a path of multiple sclerosis versus some infection. Multiple sclerosis would never look like this. We're going to talk about it later this morning. This is nocardia. That is a classic nocardia presentation. So if you get an infectious disease question and they're driving you toward nocardia, you've got the setup already with a kidney transplant, the 84% neutrophils. So this is a classic nocardia. This is a gentleman that just attended a 5-day course for internal medicine board review. Oh, no. What's the diagnosis? No, that wasn't one of the things. Now, this is pretty classic. We just saw it on the chest. Want you to make sure. We got a palsy here. We all know what the cranial nerves are, so we're good on that. We've definitely got a reddened eye. We've got a rash here right over top of the scalp here. You can see this red. We've definitely got on this. Is it a left facial palsy? No. Is it cavernous sinus thrombosis? It would never look like that. Is it an orbital lymphoma? No, because there would be huge swelling and a knot if you saw that, and you couldn't see it from a facial. Anyhow, I'd have to give you a CAT scan. This is herpes zoster ophthalmicus, and there's no orbital fracture that we're aware of because they didn't give us anything.